This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QueerFam for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. This episode is sponsored by Feathersnap. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feathersnap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or if you're like us living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high resolution camera that connects to an app so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. This episode is brought to you by California Cryobank and First Republic Bank. Thank you for making our show a possibility. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Namaste.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Let me show you.
Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride. If these ovaries could talk, you would say.
How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just because we stay.
Oh my God, Jamie. Hello.
Hi, guys. Welcome back.
I'm a little, my voice a little strained. I'm back off my college reunion tour this weekend. I was living footloose and fancy free.
Yeah, you sound a little tired, actually.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
I went to bed super early last night. I'm still really tired. This is the difference between college and today.
Oh my God.
I can't roll. But you know, I was like a 9-year-old. Like I was just like swearing and just like anything I wanted to do. Cause I was like, I can do whatever I want to do. Last night I went to bed at like 8:30.
Oh my God.
My friends were like, are you serious? I was like, listen, it's been a couple of days now. I'm done.
You really went in hard.
I did.
You went hard. I saw the photos. You went in hard. Good for you.
Stop saying hard like that. It's weird. Wait, but Jamie, while we were there, okay, so I just want to tell you, I got there Thursday night and I was sitting with like waiting for one other friend to arrive. And I was like, all right, guys. So I was like, well, my podcast is up for like an award. Maybe we should just like put it on in the background. We're not going to win it. So I'm just going to put it on in the background.
Robin and I actually did have this conversation like the week before. Like, we are not going to win this. We know we're not going to win it. We know who's going to win it. And it's not us. We knew.
I mean, usually we make like a big social thing. Let's make a video about us not winning. But we were so beaten down by not winning that we couldn't even be bothered to make fun of ourselves for not winning.
Before we even won, we were like,
we were exhausted.
We didn't win. It's done. Let's just move forward.
So now I'm trying to open up the app and I keep getting taken to some very weird video about science. And I kept being like, what is this? And then Jamie's like, no, it's right here. So I click into it and all of a sudden it's like, and Feast of Fools, LGBTQ. I was like, oh, it's our category.
I know. We opened it up right when we were getting announced. It was amazing.
And then they said our name, Jamie.
I couldn't believe it. When I saw our logo came up before he said it.
Oh, it did? I didn't see that.
I like, you hear it in the video. I couldn't believe it.
Well, the funny part is I just said to my friends, I was like, get some video of us not winning. I was like, come on, it'll be great. I was like, get the video. And then I was like, well, so our reactions were so genuine. Yeah. You literally could have pushed us over with a, was that a stick, a pin, something? You could have just knocked us, a feather.
I don't
whatever.
Know what you're, where you're going with that.
But I don't either.
We really had no idea that was going to happen. And it was, it's awesome. The second time we've won this.
Second time, 2 of 4. And because it is, there's some really wonderful podcasts in that award. And yeah. and a special shout out to Romaine and Derek and Romaine, because it's like they've be, we've become partners with them and we work out of their studios sometimes. And we got introduced to them through this podcast. So, yeah. I mean, we love the DNR show.
Yeah. And we beat them.
We liked that.
We didn't think that was going
to
happen.
I'm trying to see if I can get Romaine onto the live stream to talk about our rivalry for this award. But she hasn't responded, so I hope she's not mad.
She's probably pissed.
Don't be mad, Romaine.
I hope she's not pissed at us. We love you, Romaine.
We still love you so much.
But no, it's a really big honor, and it's great. And thank you all who voted. Thank you for voting. Thank you. Because we couldn't do it without you.
Because it is a podcast awards people's choice.
Yeah.
So it's like the people's choice. The people have spoken.
The people have spoken.
This year, anyway.
Yeah.
We'll take it. We'll take it.
Thank you.
Don't move the goalpost, Robin. Great. Don't move the goalpost.
Feels great.
Okay. So now listen, we need to talk about our 2 newest Patreon members.
Yeah.
But one of them is a story tied to my reunion, Sage Velasquez and her lovely wife, Coach Mo.
You know, Sage was the name we were going to give Rose. Anyway.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So listen, so Sage, you know, pings us on ye old social, and I'm back from day 1 of my reunion, a little tipsy, and she was like, oh, I'm in your town, like, I should come. And I said, come, we'll be tailgating tomorrow. They showed up.
That's amazing.
And they were so delightful.
That is
Sage
amazing.
And Coach Mo. And we talked for a while and they had questions because they're just starting the journey. And it, I feel like I didn't help in any way because I was doing that whole, like, my kids are 10 years old thing where I was like, oh, no, don't worry about that. You're going to have that baby. It's going to be fine. And they were like, I had all these like questions and I was like, right. They're in the beginning stages. Right. But they were so delightful. And now they're Patreon supporters.
That's wonderful. I just love it. And I love it. She posted a picture of you guys and she called you the podcast lady.
I know. I love that. But I was like, wow, I really couldn't have set this up any better. I was like, I'm at a college reunion. I was like, they made me look good.
They really
I was like,
did.
Thanks, guys.
That's like
I was like
a dream come true for college. And then she asked you to sign the book, right?
Yeah, she brought the book. Oh, it was so sweet.
You really came in there a success.
I really did.
I'll tell
I was
you that
like,
much.
You couldn't, you can't set that up.
No, you can't. It's like it's
amazing.
Like you did set it up though. It's like you did, but you didn't.
A little bit. All right. Well, thank you, Sage and Coach Mo. And we also have Nicole Farrellin, who is also a new Patreon member.
And it's probably, and I have to say, probably just as big a fan and supporter as Sage.
She just didn't happen to live in the town where I went to college, but I bet if Nicole did, she would have shown up.
Yeah, she would have. Thank you guys so much. And if you want to help us make this content for LGBTQ families, you too can join our Patreon community and you're going to do just that. You'll do a good thing and you're going to get bonus content by doing so. And at the gestational carrier level, you'll get video interviews of most episodes dropped a day early. You get to watch our ovaries a day early, y'all. Who doesn't want
you get
that?
To watch us. My cat's usually in the background. Just head over to patreon.com/ovariestalk and you can join us and help us make this content, which would be is really appreciated by us.
Yes.
Woo!
All right. Let's intro this. Oh, this is a good one.
Natalie.
You guys.
Okay. She was adopted by 2 gay men in the Bay Area.
Love that.
And it was an open adoption. It was like one of the first adoptions in the area where both men got to be on the birth certificate. Both men got to do the adoption at once. And she's in contact with her bio family. So it was open. It was great.
Great to hear her talk. And as you know, and as most of you LGBTQ parents out there like us do, is you lean in a little closer when you're hearing these queer spawn stories, because obviously we all want to know that the kids are all right, right?
We sure do.
And Natalie is all right. So
Natalie's the best.
I know. I love Natalie. I want her to be my therapist.
You're the best too, Helen. We love you too. Just come on. Just roll the tape.
Helen,
let's not
we
make
have
this a competition.
To talk about the guest, Helen.
Don't
it's
make it a competition.
It's not always about you.
Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Natalie.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me today.
We're really excited to have you here. We can't stop chatting with you, which is why it took us so long to actually start pressing record. So I feel like we just need to get right into this elevator pitch so our listeners can know Who is Natalie? Who are you?
Who am I? Who is the person behind this face?
Or this voice?
I will tell you.
On your mark, get set, go.
Hi, I am Natalie Spitz-Eshelman, and I was one of the first kids to be adopted by two gay men as a couple in 1993. So we are history, which my dads would hate for me to say because that makes them seem old, which they are, but that's okay. And so back in the 90s, social services wouldn't allow couples that weren't married to adopt. So there was a loophole that gay couples couldn't adopt because they weren't allowed to get married. It wasn't legalized back then. So it was really difficult for my parents to find a kid they could adopt. I mean, it took them 7 years to find anyone that would be willing to give up their kid.
Wow.
To two men.
Wow.
Wait, Henning, stop.
I think actually, I'm going to be honest here, Natalie. You finished that elevator pitch in like 15 seconds. You were like, I mean, you laid it down.
It's like you did. And then you just like naturally went right into the podcast. So it was perfect.
I know. I don't think you need us because you really could just sit. I think we could just sit back, drink a beer and let Natalie take over and tell the story because I think you're ready. This is going to be good.
Wait, Jamie, do you need to talk about she's from the Bay Area? Should we get that? Like, do you want to have that moment, Jamie?
Before we say that, I'm speaking for Robin because I know it's true. Anytime we talk to queer spawn, I don't even know. Do you identify as queer spawn? Do you use that term?
I had never heard of it until you guys said it.
Interesting. Yeah, it's not my favorite term. Like, I feel like we need a different one.
It feels
personally
sci-fi to me. It feels like
it does.
It feels like guppies. No, it feels like fish in the sea.
Okay, no offense to anyone who uses it. We're just saying,
no,
like,
offense,
you know.
No offense.
Oh, you could say anything. You could say anything and not offend me.
But my point was, and I never get to my point, but my point was, Robin and I get very, very excited when we talk to a child of gay parents because we are gay parents and we are every day afraid that we're screwing our kids up.
But just like,
yeah, that's a real fear.
Because of the gay reason. Yeah.
I mean, just for general purposes, but also, you know, we just want to hear how well you all turned out because then we feel like,
spoiler
alert, we can take credit.
I did an hour long call with Natalie, like a pre-call, and like she turned out fabulous. By the end, I was like, I should probably go have to pick up my son, but this conversation is so delightful. Like we were
well,
like,
I know that's why
we just kept
so
talking
to hit record.
Yeah. So I have less concerns going into this conversation because I already know that you're fabulous.
Well, thank you. I think it's a real fear that we don't know how our kids are going to turn out in general. We're all, as parents, afraid of what's going to happen. How am I going to screw up my kid? And it's going to happen. There's something that we're going to do that's not perfect because none of us are perfect. And there's that fear, especially back when my dads were adopting, of like, people are so against us. Mm-hmm. What can we do to make sure that we don't have more people against us for adopting? I mean, there's already people against you for being gay. And then being gay and adopting is a whole nother layer to that onion.
Yeah.
And so for them, they just wanted to make sure that I was healthy, happy, and safe. They kind of ticked off all the marks. And even being a behavioral therapist for 8 years, now I'm becoming a marriage and family therapist, seeing how that informs me as a therapist with my clients is so amazing. Because if I don't know if you know, but studies show that gay parents tend to be more egalitarian. So there's less stereotypes placed on kids, which is so great because then there's more opportunities for those kids to do what they want without any kind of stereotype being placed on them.
I have to stop you because this is something Robin and I always allude to, this whole like, you do what you're best at in our relationships, you know, but you just summed that up so beautifully. And that egalitarian. Yes, exactly. We're so egalitarian. I like the word. Yes.
Yeah, it's really important. And there are so many empirical and longitudinal studies that show that gay parents aren't just as good as straight parents, but in some cases, and most, I'm biased, better. But it's true stereotype. But it's true that gay parents tend to not have that in their own relationship. And we learn mostly from our parents' relationship and how they interact with each other. And we see that. And that's how we inform ourselves as adults, as human beings, how to act, how to react, and how to be in relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
I want to talk about finding the perfect sperm at California Cryobank right now.
Oh, yes, Jamie. The good old search for Superman. I know it well.
Me too. I mean, it took me at least 2 months to pick out our donor. I was like, I obsessed over every little thing. I almost didn't pick our donor because he had acne as a teenager. I mean, who doesn't have acne as a teenager?
I know. I knocked somebody off my list for eczema. I mean, that's you can really go down a hole in this process. You really can.
Yeah, I know. That's why I really am so glad that we had California Cryobank, because they really have everything you need to pick the perfect donor. They have photos. Check. Audio recording. Check. Personal essays. Check. Check. Medical screening. Check. Check. Genetic screening. Check. Check. Psychological screening. Check. And so much more. Really, so much more.
And Jamie, now we have a special code for our listeners.
OCT for a special 90-day level 2 donor information subscription, which is worth $145.
Yes, that one. And our listeners can take the time that they need to pick the perfect donor.
Or should we say the perfect Superman? You see what I did there?
Yeah, I do, Jamie. Okay, so listen. So if you are ready to start this search, here's what you're going to do. You're going to use our code OCT, register for a free account, and you're going to find that donor.
I love this offer. You guys, go to cryobank.com, open a free account, and use code OCT to activate your free subscription today.
That's cryobank.com, CRYOBANK.com. Make those babies. And then tell us about it. Let's come back to the setup of the story. Like,
and tell the Bay
us
Area.
About, yeah, tell
stuff.
Us about, do you need the moment, Jamie? Do you want the moment for the Bay Area? Let's
Bay
have
Area.
The Bay Area moment. Go ahead,
well,
Jamie.
Well, let's just, well, because I was going to say, this was the first same-sex adoption. So where were you?
So it was the second gay adoption as a couple mm-hmm. in Alameda County. So that's Oakland area. Yes. She's like, I know where that is.
I know Alameda. I know Alameda. I know Alameda County. Okay.
So I know that you have the picture of my adoption. Mm-hmm. That was the day. So I can just get into the story of what happened. And I this is not for my credit because I clearly don't remember because I was just a baby, but my dads remember it very well. I mean, why wouldn't they?
Right, of course.
And so what happened was they were going to move to Alamo because it was safer. And they were in Oakland. They had been in Oakland for years, and it's much more gay friendly there than it is in little old Alamo.
Alamo, California.
And Alamo, California. Yes. And we were the only gay family really there. And so what happened was when my dads were up for adoption from the social services to give their recommendation, because they weren't married, which was so convenient for the social services to deny any kind of recommendation because mm-hmm. that was their rule, the judge had said, I know you know that social services is declining your the recommendation for adoption, even though I've seen the report and it's glowing. It's because you guys aren't married. I just want you to know I'm going against the recommendation and I'm going to put my own recommendation in. So just relax. This is going to be a good experience.
Wow.
And everyone started crying.
Oh my God.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because they couldn't get married. It's not that they didn't choose to. They could not. That was not legally allowed.
Outright discrimination.
Exactly. Yeah.
Outright.
Catch 22.
Yeah. Loophole.
But they just found a good one. So wow. They were very lucky at that time to find a judge that was going to go against social services recommendation and realize that that was really just a rule that shouldn't have been in place mm-hmm. and realize that these two men were going to give me a beautiful life, which they had.
Now, you said that it took them 7 years to find you. Is that what you said?
And yes.
So that's when they knew they had you. That's when they were trying to adopt you, right?
Yeah. And yes. Like, can you set that up? Was it an open adoption? Like, how were they searching? Like, how did that all at that time? What were the options?
Yeah, absolutely. I can get into that.
Yeah.
So what happened was, and I'll go into like my biological mother's side because it is an open adoption.
Okay.
And my biological mother unfortunately had a very abusive childhood and she ended up in foster care. Mm. So no one really showed her kindness and her grandmother kept taking her out of foster care and putting her back in because of her ADHD. She had no support system. Mm-hmm. And the only person to be kind to her was her social worker who happened to be a gay man.
Oh.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
And so she had put two and two together that I want this for my daughter. She was only 18 when she got pregnant and 19 when she had me. Mm-hmm. She had no one in the world. And she had said, I want my daughter to have gay dads because I don't want her to just have one chance at a good dad. I want her to have two chances mm-hmm. at a good dad.
Wow.
Which is so amazing, that selflessness to give me up for adoption, to realize that she didn't have the capacity to be the mother that she wanted to be. But in that giving, she gave me something that no one else could give me, these two amazing parents.
But also like mm-hmm. this really almost like the movie Sliding Doors. Had she not met that social worker who was a gay man, she might have made a different choice. But then also I'm struck by how fluent you are. It's an open adoption in your mom's story or your biological mother. I don't want to put words. I'm not sure mm-hmm. what you call her.
Oh, of
do you
course.
Say mom or biological mom, or what words do you use to identify her?
I usually use her name, okay. mm-hmm. Karina, but she is my biological mom. And because I have technically three dads, it's just easier to say like exactly what they are so that people understand when I say it. So I'm sorry if I didn't
No.
So my biological mother. Yeah, I call her that.
Yeah, but you have all of her story because of this open adoption. It's like, there's so much mm-hmm. happening here. It's just so wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It was really a great time. And I was very lucky. And I know that I was very lucky because of that open adoption, because my parents knew her before I was even born, mm-hmm. which is how my godfather became my godfather, was that the doctor had asked because Karina wanted two men to be my parents. And so she had asked the doctor if she could ask around for a gay couple. And the doctor asked my godfather, they happened to know each other. And my godfather asked my dad that they were still looking. And without hesitation, they said yes.
Wow. Cause your dads had been looking for at least 6 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And had been told, and I'm assuming they had been told you can't because you're not married this whole time. Or how were they going about trying to get through this adoption process when it's clearly, it states you can't? What was the story there?
Mostly it was just that couples or families didn't want to give their kids up to two men.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So they were just being passed
over.
That
is really what, yes. And that actually kind of goes into my story a little bit later, but that same thing of that people having that prejudice against not only just gay people, but gay men.
Yeah.
It's so, because there's
especially
that
in the
preconceived
90s.
Idea, especially in the 90s. And they were looking in the 80s. They started looking in the 80s when it was a very homophobic time, even
HIV
in California.
And AIDS, like that was
HIV and AIDS.
Yes.
And I feel like gay men, like there weren't a lot of gay men. I mean, maybe tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there were tons of gay men trying to adopt kids at that time. I mean, did they
there
come
wasn't.
Across
I mean,
that
there was
as,
this idea that you couldn't.
Yeah.
That's how my dad came out to his dad, was that he wasn't going to have kids because he was a gay man. Because back then, if you were gay, you didn't have kids.
Right.
That wasn't going to happen for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that. That was their idea when they came out, was that they were not going to have kids because mm-hmm. because my dad's, I mean, they'll hear this. They are old. They are from the 40s and the 50s. They were 40 and 48 when they adopted me. So my dad was 50 when I was two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there was this idea that I can't have a family, or I can't live this traditional family life, you know, quote unquote, having kids because they were gay men mm-hmm. and that they just accepted it for a long time.
Yeah. And then what flipped for them? Do you know? Yeah. I mean, we're asking you all of your dad's story and I feel like it's not fair to you because
I'm like, how did they not lose faith? Like,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, what flipped for them? What made them decide, no, let's do this even?
Yeah. And it's part of my story. Their story is so ingrained in me. It's in my DNA, basically.
Well, it's your story. It's your origin story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they haven't really told me exactly like the trials and tribulations that they went through, but I know that it was just difficult because people just didn't want to give their kids up to two men. And so they kept applying and they were actually going to stop applying mm-hmm. right before the doctor talking to my godfather. They were giving up.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it wasn't going to happen for them.
And then all of a sudden, there's a birth mother who wants gay dads. And here they are.
Exactly. It was like it was fated. And that's my mantra, really, is that I know exactly where I came from, and understanding how thankful and grateful for my biological parents to give me to someone that really could provide me with that love and care that I needed. And so being thankful every day and grateful every day that I have this beautiful life because of like that decision they made almost 28 years ago.
Yeah. So they get word that there is a birth mother who wants to give to two gay men. Mm-hmm. They go to the judge. The judge says, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to make this work. Don't worry. This is going to be a good experience. And then what happens?
Actually, this happened after I was born. It took them about a year to get me fully because they knew that I was to be when I was in the womb. So she was looking quite early on to make sure that she found someone that she liked for her daughter. And
she knew she wanted to be open.
Yeah, she always wanted that. She always wanted an open adoption. And so she wanted to make sure that she liked the men that she was going to give me to. And what's funny, the funny story behind that was there was two couples, one from Alameda County, from Oakland, and then there was a couple from San Francisco. And the reason why she chose my dad's, besides liking them, she liked my dad's car. She was very excited about his car. I think it was a black Lincoln.
That's okay. Hilarious.
All right.
So after that, what happened was that everything was going fine. And then Karina actually happened to go back to one of her foster care moms. And she was a deeply religious person and found out that she was going to give me up to two men and was really upset by that and said, no, you can't give her away to two men. Oh. That's not okay. You have to get her back.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
And
she was still pregnant at this point, though, right? Or she had already...
No, she had finally given birth to me. So I was living with them.
And this woman was like, no, you need to take that child out of their loving home. Yeah. Oh,
because the adoption's not finalized yet.
Yeah.
Exactly. It took a long time. It took till 1994 to really fully adopt me. And so they lived in fear for an entire year.
With good reason. You've got Sally, religious lady, telling her to go take the baby back.
Yeah. Did Karina take heed, or did she get scared by this woman? And like,
yes, she thought that maybe it is wrong that I'm doing this, because all she would visit and what she would see is this clean, in dress, like beautiful dress girl that she got to see. Course. It was romanticized for her. Mm. And she thought that this is what raising a baby is like. Here is this beautiful baby with these beautiful dresses and headbands, and it's going to be all rainbows and butterflies to raise a child. She had no reference of what a parent was like, what it was to be a parent for anybody.
Because she's 18.
And because she had no one. She had too much of foster care to foster care.
All those things, right.
Yeah.
So did she take you back for a little bit?
So what happened was she went to my dad's house and told them, like, I need to take Natalie back. And they, of course, freaked out, because why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
And they had seen people get their kids, gay couples, lesbian couples. They saw them being ripped from their houses and just these couples crying because they're losing their children. They saw that and they didn't want that happening to them. Of course not. Mm-hmm. And so my dad came up with the idea of, why don't you live with us for a month? See what it's like to take care of Natalie. See what it's like. And you have to take care of her.
And see a loving home.
Yeah, see a loving home.
But it's also so smart, though, to say you have to do it here so they knew it would be safe for you.
Exactly.
Talk about intentionality as parents.
He got it very early on. He knew. And so even in the midst of freaking out that he was going to lose his child, came up with such a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
So that night happened. And so 10 o'clock came around and they gave me to her. And she's like, wait, she's going to sleep with me? And
the reality.
Yes, here is your baby. Yeah. You're going to take care of her. You're going to sleep in this room and you're going to take care of her. So Ron is the stay-at-home dad that came up with the plan. Steven is the one that went to work. And in the morning, my papa, Ron, he just couldn't stand it. So he went out and he ran errands. He was outside. He just couldn't handle it.
Honestly, I can't imagine handing my baby to someone
That could take her.
Especially in those early days. Yeah. Like, absolute. Like, I would be on pins and needles.
And having to say, it's your baby. It's your baby. You take your baby. Yeah. Like the fear that had to be frightening.
It was. It was heartbreaking for them. And to relinquish, not only to relinquish their daughter for just one day was too much for them.
Yeah.
Of course.
Let alone a whole lifetime.
And you were like a newborn?
Yeah. I might have been like 6 months old at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And
just enough for your dads to really, 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 really know you.
Yes.
And how to take care of you.
Know my different cries, know what they mean, all of that. Yeah. And to really like form that bond with me, which was why it was so wrong to take kids out of their homes at that point. It's just really wrong. But back then, because of the whole stigma, and there's still a stigma against gay parents, that they just wanted to get them out of that situation if they could. So what happened was my dad finally came home. He was so worried. And there was Karina sitting on the porch holding me and said, I can't do it.
Like one afternoon.
Just not even one
overnight.
Afternoon. Yeah, just
overnight, right?
Maybe 10 hours. And she just couldn't do it. Oh. Yeah, and that was the turning point.
But like, God bless her for knowing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For knowing that and knowing that you were best suited to be in that loving home.
Yeah. And I was very lucky for that kind of instant thinking on his part. And, you know, I was the only one she gave up for adoption.
Oh, because she had other kids that she kept.
After. She did. Yes. Yeah. So I was very lucky. I was her firstborn.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's a common thing. It happens.
Yes.
So you go on to like grow up with her in your life totally and completely. She's still in your life.
No.
Can you tell us about that? No, she's not.
Yeah, of course. So I think just because of her, what happened to her as a child, she didn't really have that maternal instinct. She didn't have what it took to be the parent that she probably wanted to be and that she had the heart to want to do it, but she just couldn't do it. So I never really heard from her after that. I mean, maybe like once every couple months and then once every year and then once every couple of years. But that's fine because she gave me to the parents. She gave me to my parents. And so she just never had that in her. At least back then, I don't know what she was like with my other siblings, but with me, she was never like that. And, you know, once in a while I'll talk to her. I just graduated. I'm getting my master's. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get married. So just giving her that. But I was much more close to my dad's side, my biological father's side of the family. And I'm still close with that family today. And my grandmother's coming to my wedding.
Your biological dad. I didn't realize. I didn't even realize he was in the picture at all. So.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
Well, and the way that we found you for this podcast is through your biological aunt is friends with my friend Heather. And she said she should be on your podcast. And I was like, oh my God, yes.
Oh.
Okay, Jamie, before we go any further, I have to say that If These Ovaries Could Talk is supported by First Republic Bank. With a best-in-class banking app that allows you to bank anywhere, anytime, and a dedicated personal banker when you need one-on-one service, First Republic is uniquely positioned to offer the best of both worlds.
With this combination of personal attention and convenience, it's no wonder that First Republic Bank has a client satisfaction rating 2 times the industry average. So whether you're opening a personal line of credit or planning for your retirement, you can count on First Republic to be there for you every step of the way. Visit firstrepublic.com today to learn more. That's firstrepublic.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender. I've always wanted to say that.
You'd got to say it. That's awesome. I just want to say, because we had this really cool conversation, because Jamie and I had gotten a little feedback. We had an episode that was about adoption, and we said, gave the baby up for adoption. And when we were doing our pre-call, I used that language. And then I said, wait. I said, we got this feedback that we aren't supposed to use that wording. And you said something that I thought was really interesting and provided, because what was the wording that the person suggested we use, Jamie? Do you remember? It was like made a plan for adoption.
Yeah, because giving up.
Meant you're giving
that the
up.
The parent just doesn't want the child at all, and right. It sounds kind of ugly.
But then you said something I think it was planned for adoption. Mm-hmm. But then you said something, Natalie, that was like, it kind of just was another side to it And I would love to hear you say it, because you said it so much better than I'm saying it right now.
Yeah, of course. So when you had said that, I told you not to apologize for it.
Because I apologized.
Yes. But also, you know, from my perspective, giving is selfless. We have whole holidays around giving because it's so important and it's so selfless. I mean, giving up for adoption doesn't mean you're giving up. It means you are giving this child a chance at something beautiful and amazing that you might have not been able to provide for them. So giving is selfless. And I think that my mom did give me up for adoption because she knew that I needed these two dads, and I will never see her any kind of negative way because she gave me two dads that were amazing, and I couldn't have asked for better parents.
Yeah. And I think that in speaking with everybody I know who's given a child up for adoption, they do it for a selfless, selfless reason because they know they cannot give this child the life that they know it should have because of whatever circumstances they are in at that moment. So you're right. Yeah, it is. It is.
I just thought it was another a nice way to hear the phrasing and also to know how complex our language is and to just, you know, we have to be aware of those things.
Right,
so
I
thought that, it was important that you share that.
Yeah. And it's all about owning that language and figuring out what it means to you. And I mean, we're meaning making. So we have to put meaning to words. So if you want to give that a negative connotation,
that's beautiful.
Thank you. If you want to give it negative connotation, you can. But my perspective is that it was so positive. I couldn't have asked for anything more positive, a more positive outcome. And giving, you have to give a part of yourself. It really is a part of yourself. And realizing that me giving is also very vulnerable. So being able to do that and realize it's very self-aware too, to understand that I can't do this.
Right. And I do think that coming from your perspective, the child that got so much from it, I can see how you can see this as such a beautiful gift that you got. And I can also understand why that person wrote to us and said, maybe looking at it from another perspective, like the birth mothers, no, I didn't give up. Mm-hmm. Like the way you see it is going to be
and
how
your personal experience. Your personal experience is going to inform how you take that. And that's true of everything.
And I also think, if I could say this, and I can't speak for this person because I'm not this person, but I think it's out of fear too, that these people are going to think that I gave up. Right. I gave up on my child. When it's not that, it's just that fear, maybe self-consciousness of like, maybe I made a mistake or maybe someone's going to view me as doing something wrong, when it really is like, there's nothing more you could give. That's like the biggest thing you could give someone.
It's the biggest sacrifice you could do for your child.
It's a massive sacrifice and the vulnerability and painfulness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's where it came from. It's a place of pain that giving was painful for her. And I'm sure a lot of adoptive moms, dads, anyone, is that it was hard for them. And so to hear the word give up, just it just plays into their fears that I gave up. And I don't want to feel that way because that wasn't the situation. I was telling Robin before too, that we not only are meaning makers, but we are also, we connect through relationships. We connect through others' stories. And so there's so, even when there's so much hate or homophobia, sexism, racism, the way we change is through making connections through other people. And that's why I'm so excited to be on a podcast like this, because you're broadcasting to the world your story. And maybe one person will change because I'm on here talking about my experiences vulnerably and openly. And letting them know. And if I can change one person's perspective,
I'm crying.
If I can change one person's perspective through my love, through my openness, then that's a win for me. And not that I need to change anybody or change someone else's perspective, but just the fact that if someone can say, well, she grew up really well. Well, maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe gay adoption.
Just one person.
That's all it takes, because that person tells another person, who tells another person, who tells their entire family. We need to change through love and acceptance and honesty and
Like I'm crying over here. But what you're saying is speaking directly to both of our hearts. Like, you're so right.
Yeah.
Keep going, though, because I keep cutting you off.
No, please.
What you're saying is a perfect sort of like just a little bit of a right turn into what it was like for your childhood with your dad's. Yes. Because it's like, it sounds like it was fucking awesome because you're so fucking awesome. So it's like, I want to hear about that, too, because it's like, this absolutely. Is also, in the words of Jamie, so beautiful. Like, I just, we're both just mouth agape for keep talking.
Yeah, of course. My dad's lost a lot of friends because they didn't have anything in common anymore. Their friends wanted to travel, go to bars in San Francisco, and they were like, we just want to sleep. And
yeah, they did.
And so that's what that was that they lost so many friends. And not only that, but there weren't that many couples that were adopting kids that were gay, especially gay men, but, you know, lesbian women too. And so like to be able to find a group, which we did, we were able to find a group in the Bay Area where it was just families and just meeting together and figuring out things together. And because they were, as all parents do, trying to figure things out in a second, trying to figure out as you go along, because even when people give you advice, there's just nothing prepares you for that. I mean, I know it's a cliche thing to say, but it is. And then you add that extra layer of we're two dads and we have no studies. We have no books.
Oh, yeah.
We have nothing to tell us what we need.
No representation at that time, really, to speak of. Maybe a little bit.
And, you know, my dads are kind of pioneers in a way of leading that way for other couples to adopt and to understand what it's like. And even for kids, I mean, it was, we didn't have books. I mean, I do actually, can I show you the book? I have it.
Oh my God, please.
I think it was 1993, this book came out. It's my favorite book. One Dad, Two Dads, Brown Dads, Blue Dads.
I've never seen this.
No, never heard of that book.
By Johnny Valentine. And it's no longer in print.
What?
And it's great.
Why is it no longer in print?
Is it about two dads or it's just about dads?
It's about two dads. So it's about explaining two dads to a kid and what that was like very visually. And, you know, because abstraction's so difficult and like understanding that. And kids, I don't think we realized how much kids do understand.
Yeah.
They are amazing because their brains are just trying to figure everything out. So this was a way to explain it through visual representation. So, for example, I can read you like brown dad, blue dads, blue dads, blue dads. I don't know who has dads that are blue. And it's, I do. My name is Lou. I have two dads who both are blue.
Oh,
and I don't
God.
Know if you could realize I wasn't even reading the words because I know this
it's book. In your head.
Because it's been read to you 100 million times.
Because it was the one book.
And it's because of that, too, because they were blue. Like, that's something that you can visually see is that they are blue and they can conceptualize that. Like, why are they blue? Why are they gay? Why
it's
are
that
they
they're different?
They're different.
I mean, it others them, but it others them in a way that helps a child to understand.
Yes. And did they go to the wash with a ballpoint pen? Like, what made them that way? And it's like, no, they're just blue because they're blue, because they were born that way.
Oh, my God. I love this book. Now I'm crying again, Natalie.
Stop crying.
It's a beautiful book.
Oh, my God. It really is.
So obviously your origin story, you were hearing it right out of the get-go. I mean, it was a part of your existence the whole way up.
In fact, I was outing them to other people. So I think some people told them that that would be common, that I would be so proud of them, that I was outing them to everyone. Plus, it was a shock value and I'm dramatic. So I love that. I absolutely love that. So even as a kid growing up in a fairly conservative area in Alamo, being the only gay family there and living amongst people that didn't really understand us, but my elementary school, Rancho Romero Elementary School, my middle school, Stone Valley, and my high school, San Ramon Valley High School, were so great. But even in elementary school, my principal, Mrs. McCurdy, was so excited that we were there because we were adding diversity and a different type of family to the area. And so they asked my dad if they wanted to come in and talk about the family. And kids were wonderful. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better upbringing because of that, because of my dad's and because of my environment, because kids didn't make fun of me. They didn't, you know, if they didn't understand something, they would ask.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because my daughter gets comments like, you don't have a dad? Where's your dad? She gets it all the time. So did you hear that? You just said that they would ask you questions. So yes, but did you?
Absolutely.
What was your experience of that like, being questioned by the kids and just the whole shebang, shaboodle?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yes, those were the questions that I was getting. And I still get it from kids today. And, you know, being almost 28 and having the background of therapy and psychology, being able to explain that and then doing school counseling and like really explaining that to a kid now. But as a kid, it was just like, I have two dads because I have two dads. They are married and they are together. And that's, I was adopted. I just told them exactly what I've told you. Mm-hmm. And the only time was Proposition 8. That was the only time when it was really difficult for me. And I was 13, maybe 14 at that time.
Prop 8. I feel like everybody knows Prop 8, right? Like,
I think our audience does, but you can give a one line.
Do it, Natalie, because I feel like you're going to do it way better than me.
No, I don't know, because Proposition was so confusing. Mm-hmm. And I think it was made to be confusing.
Sure was.
On purpose. Yep. And so it was this proposition in California that would either grant gay marriage as being legal or it would ban it. Mm-hmm. And it was just an extension of another proposition in 2000 that also was deemed unconstitutional, but they brought it back. And it was
a reverse vote, though, wasn't it? You had to vote no.
No.
Yeah,
to be supportive of gay marriage. It was like they did it opposite to try to trick people. Sons of bitches.
So a bunch of people who had gotten married all of a sudden weren't legally married anymore.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And that's what happened with my dad's. It was so profound that there was bumper stickers of yes on 8 signs, no on 8. I mean, I have never heard of propositions being bumper stickers because it was so prominent. It was such a big and extremely controversial. And I was in high school at that time and I was feisty at that time. And I didn't realize that in my high school, because it was a lot different. There was a lot of Latter-day Saint individuals that went there. And during that time, they had made a shirt that was a white shirt. It had a man and a woman equals keeping the family tree going. And they wore it to school. People I knew, people who knew my dad's, they were wearing it to school. And I felt like I was just
hate my
so
family.
Mad.
You hate my family. You're saying exactly. My family's not okay.
Oh my God.
I actually passively aggressively had talked directly to this one person who knew my dad's. His parents knew my dad's from like high school. And I said, you know, it's really a slap in the face that people who know my parents can wear shirts that are so against them. And it's just so disappointing that someone would do that. And I don't think I ever saw him wear that again.
I think for kids, sometimes when they're taking on their parents' values, it's like 30,000 foot view. And then what you did was say that shirt you're wearing is against my dad's and me. And I think sometimes they don't know that, like, because it's
personalizes
like,
it.
Yeah, you're being handed a set of values from your parents, and we do that too, don't we?
Of course.
I mean, we're giving.
It happens
I mean,
on just, both ends. Exactly.
We just think we're giving them the right values.
Right.
That's
exactly.
All. That's all.
Absolutely, and I think that plays into also our fears with our kids is that like it's almost like the whole world is watching us.
Yeah.
And what we do and just waiting for that misstep and waiting for the ball to drop.
Yeah. Forget about all the missteps that like the straight parents every single day.
Because it doesn't matter.
But I want to ask that. Do you feel, Natalie, do you feel the pressure that maybe we feel to make sure that our children turn out all right? That we feel that like some of us are afraid of our children turning out on the LGBTQ spectrum because society will say, well, you see, that's what happens when they raise babies, right? Do you feel that pressure? Do you take that in?
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, we even when we don't want to, we take things in. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely something. And it's so interesting that I never got that as a kid, but as an adult, having people say, oh, well, you must be gay then. You must, no. You must be lesbian.
Oh my God.
And, but also the satisfaction to tell them that I'm not too, like the fact that like, this has nothing to do with my upbringing. Sexuality has nothing to do. It's not environmental. It's
also, ew, when you think about it in that respect, like, ew, how do we put sexuality on how our parents raise us? That's so nasty and gross.
Was like, your parents' sexuality a part of your growing up? Exactly. I mean, maybe the dynamics. But yeah, I hope not. And I think that there's this notion too that men are dangerous. And yes, right. So when there's pedophiles, yeah. Why do you have a kid? And there's right. This idea that mothers have instincts. And I mean, we can see, unfortunately for my mother, that wasn't necessarily what she got. So this idea that women are going to be safe for right. kids, yeah, whereas right. that's not true at all.
That's ingrained in me. This is it. That's deep. That's
some society crap. For
and
sure.
It's something that we need to oust from our minds and our brains, because it's not true across the board. And more families need to be working towards this egalitarian relationship mm-hmm. in general. And there are many men who are nurturing. And this will help
heterosexual couples too.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I have a question for you as a practitioner. I want to know this from you, because, and I feel like a lot of adults will actually benefit from your answer here, including myself. If a child comes to you, you're working with a kid, and a child comes to you and just drops in the conversation, well, I have two moms. How do you respond?
This is a great question, especially because I, as an ethical clinician, want to make sure that I'm not imposing my own thoughts, feelings, mm-hmm. and experiences onto others.
Right.
And so I grapple with this all the time. Do I tell a child? Do I tell someone? Do I tell a family? And my answer for that kind of is that it depends. Is me telling them going to add something to their session, to their therapy? Mm-hmm. Am I going to help this person with this knowledge, or is it just going to hinder? Am I telling them for my own benefit, or am I telling them for their benefit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Because we're taught as clinicians that we need to be neutral as possible, but there's mm-hmm. this push to being more approachable and more open to things. But the sessions should be about the child or the parents or the couple. And if I feel that it will add, I will tell them. And I have in sessions before told someone or family that I have two dads, and it's added to the relationship. It's added to maybe their perception of me. But that's also what's so challenging is this going to change their perception of me? Mm. And if it does, are they going to trust me?
Mm-hmm. I have one more question for you. I would say predominantly our audience are folks who are in the process getting ready to be LGBTQ parents. Like, is there any advice or any thoughts that you have that you would leave them with about your experience that would help anyone? Or, I mean, I might be putting you on the spot, but
that's fine. That is, but that's fine. Trust yourself. Realize that you are doing the best you can. And if you give that child love, attention, support, autonomy, and being there for your kid, that's all that they need. They just want a parent that loves them. And just to remember that, I know we get bogged down by society, how everyone views us, how we see ourselves as parents, but just being there and showing up and realizing that you love this child and that is enough. You are enough. Period.
Damn it, Jamie. She said we're enough.
You're enough.
What about a couple who has been trying to conceive? Then they've realized that's not going to happen. So they are switching to adoption and might have some fears over adoption. This wasn't the plan. And they're trying to grapple with the idea that, okay, we're going to do this. There's going to be no biological connection. How do you assuage these parents' fears?
Well, their fears are valid. I think that they know what they feel and what they wanted. And even though that might not be what's happening, that doesn't mean they're less of a parent.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
are going to be as good as parents as they would have been if they had some biological tie. And from my own experience, it doesn't matter because my bond with my dad's is so much stronger than any kind of biological tie. I think that that may be meant to be because you are giving a chance to a child that may have not gotten a chance to have a beautiful life, a beautiful family, and you are giving that to them. And they're also giving you the opportunity to be the parent that you were meant to be. It has nothing to do with biology. It has everything to do with connection and love.
I love it. And that child might be the child that just needs you.
You.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. I mean, and with everyone.
Yeah.
You came on and said, like, maybe I helped one person. I'd be hard pressed to believe that you didn't help 100 people.
I was just going to say that, Robin. I just was literally going to say that.
No, I mean it. Like, there's so many people are going to be helped by your story. Just thank you so much for sharing it with us today. And we are so seriously, when you have a practice and you are doing family therapy and you want us to help you get some clients, like, just send your information our way and we'll be setting you up in the Bay Area, including Jamie.
I have a lot of friends in the Bay Area.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Natalie.
I mean, I seriously got to talk to her for hours, Jamie.
I love her.
Like, at some point we were like, we got to shut it down only because the episode's going to be 16 hours long.
And it was like bedtime.
We do get tired.
But it was a really great conversation. It was so nice talking to her. She opened my eyes in many ways.
I mean,
so I love her.
Don't you feel like if your kids come out that nice, like that together, like you'll feel like you did a good job? I mean, and not even just like as an LGBTQ parent, but just like as a parent in general.
Yeah.
All right. Go out and get our book if you feel like it.
If you feel
it's
like
the best
it.
Pitch ever. If you if you're so inclined, it's called If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making an LGBTQ Family. And it's great, especially like, are you just starting on the journey and you want to tell your parents? Get them this book because then they'll understand what you're going through, or, you know, any friends or family members that, you know, don't understand.
Yep. I want to add, the holidays are coming up.
Yes.
So it's a really great gift to give people.
Yeah.
To help them become allies, or if they're actually starting to go through this process.
And by the way, one little note, if it's not available at your library or public library, you can request it.
Mm-hmm.
So do that, and then you don't even have to pay for our book. Come on now. Anyway, get the audio book if you want us to read to you at night, and that's available at Amazon and iTunes. The other book is available, you know, all major retailers, IndieBound if you want to shop local. And, you know, don't be afraid to rate and review it, Jamie. You know, get on ye old Amazon and just say, I loved this book.
That's all you have to say in that voice.
Yeah.
See if you can type it just like that. Our next live stream is this Thursday, 10:14 at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. It is a Jamie and Robin episode, which sometimes are our favorites, where the two of us are breaking down some topics.
Halloween is our topic. Yeah. Halloween.
So join us. Bring your comments. Bring your personalities. Bring your questions. It's so fun for us. We get to know you here. It's one of our favorite things in the whole world.
But if you can't make it because you have like a job or something or kids, you know, you can watch it on YouTube, on our YouTube page later. So it doesn't matter how and when you watch it. Just watch it. Oh, let's keep this conversation going, Jamie. Join us on the social, Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube. And don't forget, you can support us and help us bring this really important LGBTQ content to light. And that's at patreon.com/ovariestalk. Woo! You get bonus content.
Yes. Yes. So do all those things. We are always asking you guys to do so much. And we really appreciate you for it.
We do.
Really, really do. And don't worry. We're going to work our butts off for you, too. We're here for you.
Okay. Thank you to our sponsors, California Cryobank and First Republic Bank. And a huge thank you to all you people who are already Patreons. You're helping us make this show. We thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Ooh, I got to look on my voice back, Jamie. I think we got to go. Ooh.
You need water. You're tired.
Dehydrated. Eggs.
Ovaries.
Smoked pack cigarettes. Ow.
That was Helen.
I don't smoke.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.